Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine, a CME podcast series where each week we translate today's late-breaking clinical research and news into tomorrow's practice. I'm Dr. Frank Domino, professor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the University of Massachusetts Chan Medical School and editor-in-chief of the 5-Minute Clinical Consult. This podcast is brought to you by PrimeMed. Liz is a 38-year-old female with obesity, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension, and that's been challenging for her to manage. She finally agreed to have a sleep study for an evaluation of obstructive sleep apnea, which you suspect is contributing to many of her ongoing health difficulties. Liz does not have transportation, however, so getting a sleep study done at a sleep center is a challenge, and returning home testing equipment will also be a problem for her. She asked if there's any other options that she can use for sleep studies while at home. What's available to Liz to get a diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea? Hi, this is Frank Domino, and joining me today is Jillian Joseph, Senior Advanced Practitioner Instructor in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at the UMass Chan Medical School and Adjunct Faculty in the Department of PA Studies at the MCPHS University, both in Worcester. Jillian is also the course chair for Track 1 of PrimeMed's Primary Care Bootcamp for PAs and NPs, an on-demand curriculum which helps early career clinicians build confidence, hone skills, and succeed. Good morning, Jillian.
Good morning, Frank.
I'll tell you, the challenges in our system to get a sleep study are enormous. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. But before we get there, what are some of the common symptoms and problems associated with obstructive sleep apnea?
Sleep apnea is a big thing for so many of our patients and remains high on my differential list for lots of symptoms or concerns. But the main issues to think about are daytime sleepiness, complaints from the patient's partner about snoring, or morning headaches. When you combine those with risk factors of obesity, older age, male sex, craniofacial abnormalities, smoking, or chronic nasal congestion, the suspicion gets even higher. There are certain medical conditions that also increase the prevalence of sleep apnea, like congestive heart failure, AFib, hypertension, chronic lung disease, hypothyroidism, or even PCOS. There have been some observational studies showing an association between sleep apnea and hypertension, coronary disease, arrhythmia, and heart failure. Most of the studies have shown that the association between these two is actually independent from the influence of obesity. And there's a growing body of evidence suggesting that treatment of sleep apnea improves cardiovascular outcomes. Patients with untreated sleep apnea do not have a normal pattern of blood pressure reduction during sleep, which can make underlying hypertension difficult to manage. Once treated, though, the evidence shows that although the decreases in blood pressure are small, they are clinically significant, since lowering blood pressure, even by 1 to 2 millimeters of mercury, decreases major cardiovascular events.
Boy, obstructive sleep apnea, it's such a challenge, and it's so common. It's difficult to treat, but it's even harder to get over the barriers of diagnosis. What are the diagnostic options that we can offer Liz today?
Yeah. When considering who should have testing, we have to take into consideration a patient's risk factors and their current concerns, right? And there are some readily available questionnaires like the Stop-Bang or Epworth Sleepiness Scale that you can do pretty easily in the office or through your patient communication portal to further assess patient symptoms and estimate pretest probability. So the gold standard for testing is attended in-laboratory polysomnography, which is difficult to get patients to do, but is really important, especially for people who you think might have complicated sleep apnea, like with chronic lung disease underlying, for example, or if they have non-respiratory sleep disorders like narcolepsy, or who are mission critical workers like pilots. Those folks should really have an in-lab test. And these tests are done with what's called a type 1 device. So it has to be performed in the sleep lab. It measures lots of different physiologic variables, and there's someone there the whole time to attend the test. There are a couple of different types of in-home or portable device testing. And these measure a variety of respiratory and physiologic variables. They're easier to do for patients and can detect the needed respiratory events for diagnosis. Depending on which variables they measure, they get categorized as type 3 or type 4 devices. Type 2 devices, which are able to be used at home, are rarely chosen. There tend to be more frequent errors with data collection, and there's no real benefit in convenience or cost compared to regular in-lab testing, since the only difference between type 1 and type 2 is whether or not there's an independent person there attending the test.
Okay, well, Liz has a number of unique hurdles to overcome. At-home testing would probably be preferable for her. Are there any apps or smart?
There are many digital devices available for people to use as screening tools, and a contactless device like a smartphone is convenient and may be able to detect mild sleep apnea with high sensitivity, but the evidence so far shows that there's a high false positive rate for these. Pulse oximetry alone isn't as great a tool for diagnosis, though it can be a valuable adjunct and is part of traditional sleep lab PSG and at-home testing. So there's so many folks who are working on this, though, and there was a recent publication in JAMA Otolaryngology, which examines sound data from a smartphone and compares it to that type 2 testing that we were talking about earlier. Again, that's unattended testing, but measures similar variables to usual lab-based traditional PSG. So this study included 101 participants over the age of 19, with the mean age just a little over 48 years old. These folks slept alone, either already had sleep apnea diagnosis or had no previous diagnosis, and they underwent an at-home unattended PSG. They did have all the instruments get hooked up in the lab, and then the participants went home to sleep. The sleep events were manually marked by sleep technologists and reviewed and confirmed by a specialist based on the sleep medicine scoring manual. The participants simultaneously recorded their breathing sounds using both iOS and Android smartphones that were placed about 50 to 100 centimeters from their pillow. So the interesting thing about this study is the investigators already had an existing prediction model for this study that was trained using over 1,000 in-lab type 1 PSGs and a large library of real-world home noise environment recordings. So in trying to validate this prediction model, the study team looked at sensitivity, specificity, positive and negative predictive values, and accuracy of the predictive model based on the recorded breathing sounds. They found for that the iOS device, the sensitivity value of AHI levels of 5 per hour was almost 93% and increased to over 93% with a higher AHI of 30 per hour. Specificity values similarly increased from about 84% with an AHI of 5 per hour up to over 94% with AHI of 30 per hour. The data was similar for the Android devices. So for the AHI of 5 per hour, the sensitivity was around 92%, specificity about 84%. When the AHI increased to over 30 per hour, the sensitivity and specificity increased respectively from 92% to 94%. The accuracy of the iOS devices was at 88.6% for the lower AHI and 94.3% at the AHI of 30. Android had similar accuracies.
Wow, that's a very comprehensive approach. They had trained the model on over 1,000 lab-based PSGs, so they had a really good baseline. And both devices, whether it was Android or iOS, seemed pretty sensitive and specific. How can we use this with Liz?
Yeah, it's a lot of percentages, a lot of numbers, but what does this all mean? Is that using a smartphone recording device, AHI can be reasonably predicted with good accuracy when compared to a type 2 at-home sleep test, which again is very close to a traditional in-lab test. So unfortunately, Liz will still need to have a type 3 or type 4 in-home test, and I'm working really hard on getting that to happen for her. But something like this could really make diagnosis much easier for those patients with transportation or other physical or psychosocial barriers to in-lab testing, like our patient Liz. Many insurance companies now prefer auto-PAP machines too, so the need for a split night or two-part PSG could potentially be eliminated for certain patients, which would eliminate a huge barrier to diagnosis and treatment.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think as the insurance companies move what they pay for, the need for extensive testing is going to diminish. So this is great. This is cutting edge stuff. Thanks so much, Jillian.
Thank you, Frank. Practice pointer. Advances in technology may soon aid at-home testing of obstructive sleep apnea, making diagnosis and treatment easier for certain patients with barriers to traditional testing methods.
Join us next time when we talk about the advances in breast cancer diagnosis and outcomes with regards to mortality. Thank you for listening to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine, brought to you by PrimeMed. To claim CME credit and receive additional information about the article referenced in today's episode, follow the link in the description. To stay up to date on the most recent clinical research and news, please subscribe to Frankly Speaking About Family Medicine, and be sure to check out PrimeMed.com for additional CME content.